Check podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talk podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Jason Goldsworthy, and I'm the Executive Director of COAST, the Centre for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. COAST is Pacific Canada's hub for the sustainable blue economy. We support ocean entrepreneurs in British Columbia through new venture support, access to facilities and equipment, training and workforce development, and ecosystem connection. To get involved with COAST, we have a membership program for organisations and individuals, which is the central conduit for all of COAST offering. Benefits are wide-ranging and include access to our network of ocean innovation hubs, joining our digital communities, event tickets, special project opportunities, and access to our new Blue Pathways Learning and Workforce Development platform. You can learn more about COAST programs and membership at canadacoast.ca/join. On today's episode, we're delighted to welcome Martin Stewart, founder of Future Marine, a marine public transportation startup based right here in Victoria, BC. We'll explore how Future Marine is looking to revolutionise public transportation using autonomous passenger ferries. Welcome, Martin, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason. Happy to be here.
Perfect. So, Martin, can you give us a bit of a brief overview of Future Marine and what you're trying to achieve with this startup?
I'll be happy to, Jason. Future Marine is a continuation of a lifetime of innovation in the maritime industry, and it is a opportunity, I think, to open up our waterways for transportation, particularly in big urban markets like the Lower Mainland or even here in Victoria, to make waterways accessible, to give people an alternative to their automobile and other forms of transportation that are clogging our roads and creating GHG emissions in large urban centers like Vancouver.
Okay. So I'm hoping to delve a little bit more into that later on, but I want to talk about you personally. How did you get involved? What's your background and how did you come to start this Future Marine?
Well, Future Marine is, as I say, it's a continuation of a lifetime for myself of innovation. And in this case, I was operating a large vessel with a big diesel engine, and I was in Europe looking for an alternative. I was looking for electric propulsion, and I found it. It was available and too expensive. So I thought, well, that's done. But on my way from that experience of seeing that innovation, I bumped into a company called ZBus. And ZBus are in Trondheim in Norway. And ZBus are the innovator in this space of autonomy on the water. And they're a startup from NTNU, the Norwegian Technical University in Trondheim. And I made a terrific connection with their CEO. And from there, I saw the opportunity where in Canada we could, particularly in British Columbia, using autonomy, we could realistically provide a waterborne public transit system.
Okay. So you mentioned at the top your experience was working on a diesel ship and you wanted to move to electric and then autonomous. What kind of excites you the most about Future Marine and the direction that Future Marine's going? Is it the transition from diesel or is it the autonomy? Or what sort of gets you out of bed the most in the morning?
Well, it's all of those things that we can realistically help to reduce GHG emissions in large urban centers utilizing zero emission propulsion. In our case, we're utilizing electric propulsion. There are other forms of fuel that are coming and will be employed. For small vessels, I think electric propulsion is ideal. And so we are utilizing electric propulsion, and then we're taking the congestion off the streets by way of utilizing waterways. Waterways are transportation networks that are underutilized. And they're underutilized because infrastructure costs, the cost of operations of ferries, is very high. And a good example of that is the Seabus in Vancouver. 14,000 people a day, a very valuable service, necessary service to move people in and out of the city. And yet it's not replicated. It's not scalable. The cost of infrastructure, docks, the cost of the ferries themselves, and the cost of the operations do not allow for that service to be offered up and down the harbor. We know that we can provide high frequency service in the harbor, on the rivers, along the coastlines, utilizing autonomous craft. And autonomous craft do something very, very important for us, and that is they allow for hundreds of vessels to be operating independent of crew. Now, those crew will still be very necessary to operations, but they will be located in shoreside facilities, providing the oversight, the safety aspects of the operations of the autonomous fleet. And I think that for all people who want to be in this industry, there will be enough jobs. There will be, in fact, interesting jobs, high quality jobs, jobs that allow for people to come and go from their homes on a daily basis. I think we're going to create both a viable ferry system, and we're also going to create high quality jobs within British Columbia, within the maritime industry.
So want to sort of unpack a couple of things there. So you talked about, I mean, when we think in ferries in British Columbia, your default is BC Ferries. Hello Ferries is now traveling from Nanaimo to Vancouver. And then you've got the smaller craft, which I think Future Marine's looking at, but they're more on the touristy side. But we're looking at this being almost like a sea bus, isn't it? Like a very high frequency, repetitive route to help people navigate or transport, you know, use it for their daily commutes rather than using vehicles. And that's where you're sort of aiming this for. Did I get that right?
You did. Absolutely. And, you know, all of those services that you've described are all doing important work. Hello Ferries have brought Nanaimo back into being a viable alternative to live and to work in the Lower Mainland. That is a tremendous benefit to Nanaimo, to the people who are finding the cost of housing in the Lower Mainland prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So there's many social benefits there. BC Ferries, of course, offer an important and necessary service to extend the Trans-Canada Highway to Victoria. They are innovating, too. They're building ships that are electric propulsion. And you mentioned then, too, the services in Victoria and in Falls Creek, which are tourist-oriented. So everybody is doing interesting things on the water. But what we see is that the waterways, even with all of those vessels, are still underutilized. And so any one of those businesses, I would say, currently is not able to scale to the extent that would be necessary to truly provide the scope of service, the frequency of service that would ultimately change people's behavior, would ultimately make the decision for somebody to leave their car at home, to avoid the Lionsgate Bridge, but to find a ferry near their home where they can walk, cycle, however they get there, not based on a schedule, but based on the time at which they want to travel and is consistent with that sense of freedom to move when you want to move. And it allows you to, from home to office or from office to office, you are able to move about in this urban environment.
And you mentioned an important topic there, which was the scaling, and you said those other enterprises aren't able to scale, and that's where the autonomy kicks in a little bit. I think you'd agree that, you know, with that autonomy, you can scale and you can have lots of these vessels operating in these waterways, and it meets that schedule that you're talking about. So it makes it more convenient for people rather than, as you mentioned, a schedule.
Yes, indeed. And you can think of somebody leaving their office. Today, they may go down into the parking lot, they get into their car, and they drive to another meeting. They feel, and they do have, a certain degree of freedom. Mm-hmm. Their sense of freedom is maybe a little more accentuated than is actually true, in that you go out into the traffic. and you may sit in traffic, and traffic may change your entire commute time. It may make you late for a meeting. But what we know is necessary, what we believe is necessary, there's a lot for us to know yet, that we have, this is a big social enterprise exercise, of course. What we believe to be true is that if that person walking out of their office then walks towards a known destination, a known location for a ferry service, they see the ferry coming in, they see the ferry leaving, they're not panicked by that because they know that there is always another ferry close behind. And then they are going to that location, they're on their phone, they're continuing to think about where they're going, what they're about. They're arriving at the ferry, stepping on, and going to wherever they wish to go. That is doable with autonomy, because what it requires is literally hundreds of vessels circulating in a large harbor region like Cole Harbor, Vancouver Harbor. And then there are times of day. There are times of in the morning, in the afternoon, when large numbers of people are moving, and the service has to accommodate that. And that is part of the challenge with the Seabus, for example, is that while they transport 14,000 people a day, that's not over the entire day. That is a large number at the beginning of the day and a large number at the end of the day. But the vessel continues to go back and forth, continues to consume the fuel, mm-hmm. continues to accumulate those costs. Therefore, it's really not representing the actual demand. And the costs of doing that are prohibitive. Therefore, that's why you see public institutions, governments, today paying the costs of public transit development. The SkyTrain is being extended at $250 million per kilometer. I believe that Future Marine, I believe that this is an occasion, a time at which, in fact, private sector, the private industry, can come back into the provision of public transit. I think that you'll see this on land, you'll see it on the sea, you'll see it as we imagine it. And I think that autonomy will play a very, very important role in that. I know that is, for us, the key technical innovation that makes this possible for us.
Perfect. Well, let's talk a little bit about the technology, but I think you mentioned about people being caught in traffic jams, and there might be people listening right now that are caught in a traffic jam, and I'd like to say to them, there may be an alternative coming soon. So yes, watch this space. But let's talk about the technology and specifics around what type of vessel this looks like. What is the Future Marine, maybe the starting vessel, and what do you see? Because we're not talking about autonomy for the BC Ferries major class ships, are we? We're talking much smaller and much more nimble. So maybe give the listeners a bit of an idea of what the type of vessel you're thinking at this point.
We are thinking that a vessel for 12 passengers, mm-hmm. that also accumulate can accommodate various mobility devices from bicycles to scooters and to other mobility devices that are making people so much more mobile in urban environments. 12 passengers and their devices moving about with ease of landing of boarding passengers and discharging passengers. Passengers will come into a dock system that is integrated with the vessel. The dock will be floating. The dock will have a fairly simple connection to the foreshore by way of a gangway. And this system then is one that we need to test. And that's where we are today. We are building our first prototype vessel. And by the middle of next year, that vessel will be going into sea trials here in the harbor in Victoria. So that's a very exciting prospect for us that by this middle of 2025, the vessel will be in service, operating between across the harbor. And in that, we will be both testing the technology and we will be introducing the concept of autonomous ferries to the public, to Transport Canada, and to our friends to the south in Washington. We're having a lot of success in Washington introducing the autonomous ferry into that market. And we see, though, the importance of being here in Victoria, focused in Victoria, and starting to do sea trials here to gain public acceptance, to gain the acceptance of the regulatory authorities. This is our home. This is our center of focus. This is where we'll be in 2025 with the first in North America, the first ferry of this type, an autonomous ferry, the first in North America operating here in Victoria.
So you mentioned Victoria and its home, and we'd like to say that as well, or British Columbia. But what makes Victoria and British Columbia a good place to do this for you? Obviously, it's home, but there are obviously some other advantages as well.
Well, here we are, a Coast podcast, and Coast makes this very, very important to us, the Coast Collaborative. I'm having conversations at Coast on a daily basis, several. I'm meeting people that today I was talking about the weather, about marine weather forecasting. And a few days ago, I was talking about the engineering students at UVic who are all in a co-op program. Future Marine wants to build a team of people and a conduit into our organization for those young people who are engineering students and students of all kinds. So why Victoria weather? It is a beautiful climate for the purpose. It has the harbor itself is actually quite a complex harbor environment, seaplanes and commercial recreational traffic. It's also a harbor where we are able to work with the local authorities, with the Greater Harbor, with the Greater Victoria Harbor Commission, and work with First Nations organizations and be part of a community, a community built around the harbor, a community that depends on the harbor for commerce. And I think all of those aspects of life in Victoria are so essentially important to expose this autonomous ferry to. And I say expose it to, the ferry has to operate autonomously within that complex environment. And I think this is a beautiful laboratory for that purpose. And I live and work and play here And I'm very thankful to have that opportunity to be able to start here in Victoria.
Well, you're talking to a captured audience, but and I moved across the world for this. But anyway, that's another discussion. So you mentioned, I think you mentioned ZBus in Trondheim. You mentioned you're working with Washington State in the US. There's obviously a lot of water bodies where this technology can be adapted and can be utilized for the future as well once it's established. Where else in the world are they making advancements on this, and where are they at, and where do you see that there's opportunity for future marine in the future? It was always going to come. I was always going to get that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a future.
Yeah.
Our partner, you've just mentioned them, ZBus, our technology partner, they, with their customer, Torghatten, a company similar to BC Ferries, put the first autonomous ferry into service in Stockholm in June of last year. So ZBus and Torghatten are now 1 year into that commercial operation. And that is an enormous benefit to Future Marine. All the know-how, all of the learning that has gone on, and there have been big challenges that they've had to overcome. We are benefiting from all of that know-how, and we are bringing it into this project and adding our own intellectual property, adding our own ideas, our own concepts. And through this trial that I've mentioned, beginning this in August of next year, we will do what ZBus and Torghatten have been doing. We will spend a year, 18 months in trials and building upon that know-how. Where we see this going is that once it's fully operational in Victoria, and when it's fully operational in the Lower Mainland, then Future Marine will have a model for a public transit, a marine public transit system. That includes anything from point of sale to safety systems to, I mentioned earlier, that there will be really rich, good jobs for people who are in our shoreside facilities, operation centers, and elsewhere. We will also need to manufacture these vessels very, very efficiently. We are designing them from the beginning of their life to the end of their life so that this is truly a sustainable business. We know how the vessel will be remanufactured or how the materials will be disposed of. So there's so many elements of this that I find incredibly important to the notion of sustainable, any industry being sustainable. And so imagine putting all of that know-how essentially into a box and then being able to take that know-how and go to Singapore, go to New York, go to London, go to the big cities around the world, all of which are on bodies of water, and being able to offer that system to that city as a complete operating business.
Yeah.
I think they call that franchising. I think we'll probably give it a different name because it's there's something there that is needs to be described in a way that is it represents its novel concepts and the sustainable nature of what we're doing.
And I think, I mean, the opportunity, as you talked about, those waterways, they're all over the place in terms of cities and before you even get to, you know, Asian cities. But there's huge opportunity there. And the other important thing that you mentioned in that one is this technology exists. It's already happening. This is not sci-fi. This is it's happening in Stockholm, as you mentioned. They've been running it for 12 months. So we're not that far. Like, you know, there's not many leaps that need to happen. So given that, I mean, you're obviously very well versed in this. How far do you think, or in how many years do you think it could be that these autonomous ferries and waterways, lots of little ferries moving around, become a reality for some of these cities? Are we talking 5, 10 years? I mean, what's your feeling?
The project that we're starting, the sea trials that we're starting midway through next year, I believe will take about 2 years. I think it'll take 2 years to go from the vessel being built and operated under current Transport Canada regulations, which requires one qualified crew, one captain on board a 12-passenger vessel, to being able to have a person on board who is more oriented to customer service, and eventually that person coming ashore into our operations center, whereby the vessel is operating independent of crew and monitored from shore. I think those three steps with Transport Canada as a partner in this project will take about 2 years to complete.
Yep.
And once we have those regulatory licenses in place, we will be then able to build a vessel that is now being built according to a new Transport Canada regulation for autonomous vessels, or as they're known today, as marine surface ships, marine autonomous surface ships, that we can build. We can build a fleet fairly quickly and deploy it into, for example, into the Coal Harbour region. I think we can be in service in a limited region in the Lower Mainland, for example, within 3.5 years.
Okay. So we're not far.
We're not far away. We're not very far away.
And I think that's exciting for a lot of people, especially me. I mean, I'd much prefer to be on a boat than in a car, but that's just me. So it's a pretty aggressive, like it's ambitious, and I think that's great. What's some of the challenges you're seeing to get you there? What are some of the biggest challenges you've seen as a startup and in this space?
Well, we met with venture capital early on in this project. We were well organized. We had a compelling story to tell, and no revenue. No retained earnings, no revenue, no track record of a commercial enterprise. And we understood that venture capital was not the first step. We looked at other possibilities, friends and family. What I saw, though, was the opportunity to bootstrap this. I saw that, I mentioned that I had a perhaps
you're
didn't.
About to mention it now. So it covers it now. It covers that base.
So I had a terrific phone call this morning with a supplier of a dynamic positioning system, a company that I've been talking to for 18 months. They are going to supply us with a key piece of our technology at their cost because they want to be part of this exciting project. ZBus, they want to be part of this. DNV, Detnors Veritas, they too want to be part of this. I have been able to bring together these key suppliers, including a local boat builder, in a way that they want to be part of this. And that is what I describe as bootstrapping, including some local business and First Nations and other people who I see as our necessary team of advisors. All of that said, there is still the need for capital. And we have, Jason, a terrific opportunity through Coast and we can talk about that if you wish. The coast-centeredness, I think, of Future Marine now and all of what I've just described in respect to bootstrapping is actually created a better organization, a better company, a better collaborative, and we need capital. And so we see that there are capital markets. There's the public sector capital market. Canada has a strong commitment to the blue economy. Canada has committed a substantial amount of resources to that. And we believe that Future Marine is a very good investment for Canada for the deployment of those resources, the capital resources that is available through organizations like the Canada Oceans Supercluster. And we now are in a position to make a very compelling, very strong case for funding, for support.
Well, I'd love to sit here and talk more, especially about the coast stuff, but, you know, the listeners will turn off if all I do is talk about coast. So, Martin, it's been great to have you on. I know we've shared a number of discussions and I'm very supportive of Future Marine, and I'm looking forward to seeing the trial starting next year. And I can't wait to see these boats, these autonomous ferries, traveling around all over the place. I think it's a great vision and one that hopefully our listeners share. So thank you for your time, Martin. And thanks to our listeners for joining us for Coast Talks. If you'd like to learn more about our work, visit our website at canadacoast.ca or follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Bye for now.